is at a brewery or a distillery, they expect to have an experience in a tasting room, and it's where we build our brand.
New alcohol legislation is on the table in the Capitol, and not everyone is happy with it. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, May 7th. Good evening. I'm Zachariah Hughes. Also tonight, the State Division of Public Assistance is swamped with applications affecting thousands of Alaskans.
I think the division is at a place where they have to work their way out of the backlog. They can't manage their way out of it.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Alaska Heart and Vascular Institute, committing to improving the lives of Alaskans. Using a team approach, Alaska Heart and Vascular Institute offers a range of cardiovascular diagnoses and care. Learn more at alaskaheart.com.
Alaska is one step closer to getting a gas supply for its massive natural gas pipeline project. The Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation announced today that it's settled on the terms of a gas sales agreement with BP Alaska. The final agreement hasn't actually been signed yet, but Corporation President Keith Meyer says the key terms, that is the volume of the gas and how much it will cost, have been figured out. BP owns more than a quarter share of Prudhoe Bay and about one-third of the nearby Point Thompson field. Meyer says the company has committed to selling all the gas it can produce from those fields, but that won't fill the pipeline. The state corporation will need gas supply agreements with all of the North Slope producers for the project to run at full capacity. What this agreement could do is help the project get financing this year. Meyer says he sees the gas supply agreements as a key piece in that process.
So now that we've got the supply pieces falling into place, now that lets us get a lot more clarity on the financing piece, which is also underway, but that'll take really through the balance of this year.
This agreement is one of many the state corporation is negotiating right now. It's on a tight timeline to get them done in time to meet peak gas demand in 2025. State corporation must get final agreements to buy gas from producers, line up buyers, and secure the federal and state permits to build the $45 billion project. The Alaska legislature is nearing the session's end. One thing that's not clear is whether lawmakers will completely revise state alcohol laws for the first time in 35 years. Some brewery and distillery owners want to head off a proposal limiting how much they can serve customers. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports.
Getting alcohol producers, wholesalers, and retailers to agree can be a challenge. The concerns of groups that want to prevent and treat alcohol abuse make it even more complicated. But until last week, these groups were in agreement over the need to make changes. Here's Soldotna Republican Senator Peter Michicki describing what went into the legislation to change the state's alcohol laws, known as Title IV.
We brought together a group of folks that perhaps don't always see eye to eye, and over an extensive series of meetings brought it to Title IV you see today, where they have agreed that this is the path forward for the industry.
Among the many changes the bill makes, it would adjust license fees to cover a bigger share of state costs to regulate alcohol sales. It would simplify the licenses that alcohol sellers must have, and it makes the penalties more consistent for businesses whose workers sell alcohol to minors. Until last week, it didn't address the divisive issue of how much breweries and distilleries can sell directly to the public as samples. But on Friday, the House Labor and Commerce Committee amended the bill. It dropped the amount of beer and liquor samples these businesses can sell by a third. Brandon Howard is the co-owner and founder of Amalga Distillery in Juneau. His business's tasting room has helped attract customers' interest since it opened nearly a year ago.
When they visit a brewery or a distillery, they expect to have an experience in a tasting room. And it's where we build our brand. It's where we establish ourselves.
Howard is concerned about the late change to the bill.
To come in and potentially undermine this bill that's been worked on by a steering committee over the last 6 years at the end of session is irresponsible, selfish. It's unconscionable.
But there are bar owners who support the change. They see the current laws that allow breweries and distilleries to serve alcohol as disturbing what was once an even playing field to one that's unfair. That's because bar owners have to pay many thousands of dollars for their licenses. Abby Williams is the co-owner of Louis Douglas Inn in Douglas. She says she expects competition with similar bars.
What I didn't expect when going into business and into debt by purchasing a beverage dispensary license and doing an extensive remodel on a building, that I would soon be competing with the manufacturers, those who manufacture or distill a bottle of liquor for an amount substantially less than the price I'm required to pay to the distributors.
The bill still has a couple of steps where it could be changed or stalled. It goes to the House Finance Committee next. Then it would face a vote on the House floor. And if the House passes it, the Senate, which has already passed it, will have to decide whether to agree to the House's changes and send it to Governor Bill Walker's desk. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Alaska's governor and lieutenant governor are planning to run for re-election by entering into the Democratic primary in August. The Fairbanks Daily News Miner reports Governor Bill Walker and Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott had planned to bypass the primary and go directly to the November elections by gathering signatures to run as unaffiliated candidates. Walker is a former Republican, but he ran as an independent when he became governor in 2014. Mallott is a Democrat. Campaign manager John Henry Heckendorn says the two had gathered about half the signatures required to be placed on the November ballot. He says the new plan was not due to any concern about the signature gathering process. Walker will appear on the Democratic primary ballot as an independent. Mallott will be listed as a Democrat. An investigation of complaints against the Alaska Division of Public Assistance found several major problems causing aggravation for thousands of Alaskans. The investigation report out today from the State Ombudsman Office says the Division of Public Assistance is swamped with applications and has failed to meet state and federal mandates for processing them in a timely manner. The report also says members of the public have had great difficulty getting responses to questions and that the division's processing for long-term care is, quote, inefficient and ineffective. State Ombudsman Kate Burkhart says division staff are well-intentioned and doing the best they can with the resources they have. Burkhart says one of the most crucial recommendations in the report is to add personnel to deal with the communication problems and backlog roughly 20,000 applications deep.
I think the division is at a place where they have to work their way out of the backlog. They can't manage their way out of it. They have to have the staff adequate to meet the demand. And the division has documented an increase in demand through increased applications for benefits like food stamps and Medicaid.
Burkhart says the Division of Public Assistance has already been working on many of the issues identified in the report, including streamlining its systems for processing applications. But both Burkhart and Division Director Monica Windham say eliminating the backlog is unlikely without adding dozens of new positions. Windham says she's keenly aware that budget cuts in recent years have put increased focus on reducing state government. She says the division has been trying various strategies the last couple of years and until recently was reluctant to ask for more staff.
Because we know it's a tough ask. We have not made the progress. We do eliminate some of the backlog every month, but we also add to the backlog every month because just the number of cases are just too high for the number of staff we have right now to get the work done.
It remains unclear if the legislature will fund additional positions, which Governor Bill Walker has requested. A conference committee is still considering different versions of the state operating budget from the House and Senate. The House's version would fund 41 temporary workers at the Division of Public Assistance, while the Senate's budget does not include any funding for the positions. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Sea Alaska Corporation is turning a profit again after several years in the red.
Enhancing the health and the productivity of our homelands is what our ancestors have done for 10,000 years. We're just following a path.
That is ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing and exploring on the North Slope and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources. And by Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com.
The Chillister Regional Corporation is denying that its CEO mishandled a sexual harassment complaint. In a press release Friday afternoon, the corporation's board of directors alleged that its ousted chairman is deliberately spreading misinformation about the company. KYUK's Teresa Katsarilis has more.
Chillister's board of directors says its former chairman, Colonel Wayne Dawn, isn't telling you the truth. In interviews with KYUK, Don and his attorney said that Chillister CEO Andrew Guy failed to properly respond to a sexual harassment complaint against a former employee. But in their statement Friday, the board claims that, quote, the woman never made even one complaint to Mr. Andrew Guy that she had been sexually harassed. Tom Leonard is Chillister's communications manager.
The person that was harassed did not approach Mr. Guy.
The board's statement was released by its new chairman, Paul George Guy, who happens to be CEO Andrew Guy's cousin. It further claims that Wayne Dawn made, quote, incorrect and misleading statements to both KYUK and the Delta Discovery, and that this violated his, quote, fiduciary duties. Friday's press release is the latest in a series of allegations that Chillister has made against Dawn, who is refusing to resign from the corporation's board. His fellow board members have already stripped Dawn of his chairmanship and voted to publicly censure him. At the center of this dispute is an unnamed former Chillister employee who is accused of repeatedly sexually harassing a woman. According to Dawn's attorney, the woman told CEO Andrew Guy what was happening, and Guy failed to respond to her complaint. This harassment claim eventually made its way to Chillister's Human Resources Department, and Chillister investigated and then fired the offending employee. In their statement Friday, the board didn't just deny that the woman ever told Andrew Guy about the sexual harassment. It also cast doubt on whether she was harassed at all. The board says Chillister's former employee had not, in fact, repeatedly sexually harassed the woman. Quote, this highly inflammatory statement is completely false. But then they say that an attorney who reviewed the allegations concluded that it was, quote, likely the employee's conduct violated Chillister's sexual harassment policies. And then they say the employee was fired as a result of an investigation. KYUK asked Chillister spokesperson Tom Leonard about these apparent contradictions in their statement. I don't see how that statement can be completely false if it is likely that this man violated Chillister's policies against sexual harassment and that the investigation resulted in his firing. So if you think that I'm reading that wrong, please let me know. Leonard paused for a long time before he responded.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't have any further light I can shed on that.
Okay. Dawn's attorney, Sam Fortier, says that Dawn tried to address Andrew Guy's alleged failure to respond to the sexual harassment. He says Chillister's board of directors shut Dawn down and is now trying to push him out of the corporation. Of course, Chillister says it's censuring Dawn for completely different reasons. Chillister's press release claims that Dawn committed at least 14 instances of misconduct while serving as the corporation's chair. Though spokesperson Tom Leonard says he didn't know what any of that misconduct actually was.
Well, the specific details on that have not been shared by the board at this time.
In an interview Friday afternoon, Fortier said that he and Dawn stick by what they said in KYUK's previous coverage. Everything we told you is true, he said, and we have the evidence to back it up. The board also previously claimed that Dawn had threatened CEO Andrew Guy, interfered with an internal investigation, and improperly issued orders to other employees. But Tom Leonard said he also didn't know what those accusations actually referred to. Neither CEO Andrew Guy nor the current Chillister board chair, Paul George Guy, could be reached for comment on Friday. In Bethel, I'm Teresa Katsarilis.
The Fairbanks North Star Borough has received a federal grant to improve local air quality. The $4 million targeted air shed grant, announced by the Environmental Protection Agency last Wednesday, is the latest aimed at reducing fine particulate pollution from wood and coal burning. Borough Air Quality Manager Nick Czarnecki says the grant will fund a borough program that helps people convert cleaner burning fuels.
The big difference with this funding is it's going to target switching out solid fuel burning appliances such as wood, pellet, and coal to cleaner burning alternatives such as fuel oil, natural gas, or propane.
Czarnecki says borough residents who reside within an EPA-defined air quality non-attainment area can also apply for funds to purchase emergency power backup systems to eliminate the need for wood-fired heaters.
Such as a battery backup or a generator or solar panels that would provide power to their oil boiler so that if the power goes out, they would still have heat.
Czarnecki adds that participating in the borough program brings a deed restriction that bans future installation of solid fuel burning devices at the property. He says the grant will take a bite out of the estimated 12,500 wood and coal burning stoves and boilers in the non-attainment area.
We're projecting that this money can be used to change out around 476 devices.
Czarnecki says qualifying residents are eligible for around $6,000 to $14,000.
The $14,000 is specifically for if you remove a hydronic heater and go to electric, natural gas, or propane. The incentive levels are based on the level of emission reductions we get because we want to incentivize those devices that would see the greatest emission reductions.
Czarnecki notes that there's still $1.7 million remaining in an EPA grant-funded version of the borough program, which helps residents upgrade to more efficient wood stoves and boilers. Gas prices in western Alaska could jump later this month. As ice breaks and barges carry fuel into rural communities, companies are likely to begin charging rates reflecting oil prices that have been on the rise since this fall. KDLG's Izzy Ross has more.
Western Alaska is likely to see a jump in fuel prices this month. Mike Poston is director of sales at Vitus Energy, a company that services around 200 communities from the Aleutian Chain to the Kotzebue Sound. He anticipates that consumers will see higher prices by the end of May.
West Coast crude on May 1st of 2017 was $50.69 a barrel. On May 1st of 2018, it's $72.18 a barrel. For ANS crude, the difference amounts to 51 cents a gallon. Refined products is probably pretty similar to that. You put sales tax on top of that, and it's pretty significant.
Bristol Bay Industrial Fuels President and CEO Robert Cox said in an email that world oil prices have risen substantially since BBI received the last shipping in September. The company expects to pay more for fuel this summer, which will then show at the pump. Consumers in rural areas are likely to see such a jump in prices because transportation of fuel to rural Alaska occurs mainly during summer months when waterways are free of ice. Most terminal operators store a certain amount of product during the winter. That allows them to sell fuel at last year's prices until barges arrive carrying new fuel at current market prices.
The price of gasoline at the pump in Anchorage has been going up almost every week all winter long. The folks in Vitus' service area, they haven't seen those increases. And the benefit is that they haven't had to pay the steadily increasing price every time they go to fuel up. But that does make it more of a shock when it does finally hit.
Poston cautions that the rise in fuel prices isn't guaranteed. But sooner or later, an increase in crude oil prices is typically reflected in consumer pocketbooks. In communities like Dillingham, that increase will probably be sooner.
As the cost goes up, the price has to go up. And, we don't know exactly how much that's going to be. We don't know exactly the date that's going to happen. But we just know that it's coming.
Asked who might experience this price increase, Poston's answer was simple. Every community in Western Alaska. In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds, narrowing blood vessels. Clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart. Protect it. This message sponsored by Alaska Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
Sea Alaska Corporation distributed its 2017 annual report to shareholders Thursday, showing it had a very good year. The Regional Alaska Native Corporation for Southeast says it earned $43 million in profit last year, tripling its 2016 earnings. KTOO's Jeremy Shea visited Sea Alaska headquarters to discuss the company's turnaround with CEO Anthony Malott.
2017 is a great year. It's a milestone. It should be recognized. But the excitement is really the new era, the change, that we have confidence that we can keep that business performance going and just create consistency of growth for Sea Alaska that we haven't had in our history.
The first graph in the annual report tells the numbers story at a glance. A total reversal from being $35 million in the red in 2013 and a clear trend line into the future. 2017 was the fifth year in the five-year plan that included a goal of financial stability based on the businesses Sea Alaska directly operates. Previous year's profits depended on its passive investment income and revenue sharing income from other Alaska Native corporations. The plan called for realigning Sea Alaska's business interests with its shareholders' values. Relevant and meaningful was a refrain in the boardroom.
Yeah, we are focusing on enhancing the health and the productivity of our ocean and land environment. That ocean and land environment is our homelands. And enhancing the health and the productivity of our homelands is what our ancestors have done for 10,000 years. We're just following a path.
The new corporate philosophy also meant generally scaling back timber operations, entering the carbon credit market through forest preservation, and expanding government contracting services focused on environmental work. And the corporation began adding, in 2016, new lines of business in seafood processing in the Pacific Northwest.
Are there any like other lingering misalignments in Sea Alaska's portfolio?
No.
Malott says timber remains Sea Alaska's main income source among its businesses, but he says it will soon be overtaken by its second most profitable line, government contracting and environmental services. Seafood is a small piece of the pie, but Malott expects a lot of income growth among its recently acquired packing plants and says expansion into other foods is coming. There is a big caveat on Sea Alaska's 2017 profits. Roughly two-thirds came from sources that it has little control over, financial investments, and revenue sharing from other Alaska Native corporations. Without those two sources, which can vary a lot from year to year, Sea Alaska still would have turned a profit. Sea Alaska Board Chairman Joe Nelson says that's a huge milestone.
So the next phase for Sea Alaska is going to be a lot more energy focused on our people, our communities, our homeland, which is core to our mission. So everyone's excited. You know, we're a for-profit company, and that's never been in question, but we've really turned things around in our operating companies such that we're able to get to the real work of investing in our communities.
One community investment the annual report highlights is Sea Alaska's scholarship program. The corporation set aside $10 million last year, tripling the endowment that helps pay for shareholders and their kids' post-high school education. It's already boosting scholarships being awarded this spring. For accounting purposes, it's an expense, but Malott says philosophically, it isn't.
The money we put into SHI, the money we put into scholarships, the money we put into our internship programs, we don't consider those expenses. We consider those investments. The ability to help our people attain their educational goals is positive for them personally, provides upside for our communities, having a better educated base of community members. And can lead to talent development specifically for Sea Alaska. It's all part and parcel.
The message is that Sea Alaska's financial turnaround is a validation that tying traditional values to business practices was the right call.
Plastics was not a part of who Sea Alaska was.
But Malott says that's only half the story. The corporation's next 5 years will tell the rest. In Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea.
A dozen bison from interior Alaska are set to be transported to Siberia as part of a geoengineering project. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the bison are central to an experiment to see if herd animals can help protect permafrost from the warming climate.
Nikita Zimov and his father Sergei have purchased yearling bison from a Delta Junction area ranch. Nikita Zimov says the animals are headed to Pleistocene Park, a 20-square-kilometer research plot in eastern Siberia, where the Russian scientists are trying to recreate an ice age ecosystem.
We know that the main four species were mammoths, bison, horses, and reindeer. And bison were actually the most dominant.
The Alaska bison will complement horses, musk oxen, reindeer, and yaks, the Zimovs previously transplanted to Pleistocene Park. The rewilding project is an experiment to see if herd animals can prevent the melting of carbon-rich permafrost.
Animals, when they forage, trample down the snow. So when animals trample down the snow, they allow this cold to penetrate, and in the winter, soils freeze much deeper.
Zimov says grasses, which proliferate on trampled earth, reflect more sunlight, store more carbon, and dry underlying soils, reducing production of the powerful greenhouse gas methane. It's a small-scale exercise with potentially global implications and worth pursuing, according to ecologist Terry Chapin of Fairbanks.
It takes the actual experiment to determine what the outcome will be, and I think that's the value of Pleistocene Park.
Chapin, an accomplished researcher of the ecological impacts of climate change, has visited the park, knows the Zimovs, and is helping with the effort to transport the bison.
They're going to build the crates that'll carry the bison. They're going to build those in our garage.
And an 11-month-old bison is, like, bigger than you would expect. They weigh about 500 pounds. They don't like to be confined, so they're difficult to deal with. They're kind of like little furry Tasmanian devils with horns.
Luke Griswold Turgis of Haines is making a documentary about Pleistocene Park and handling a lot of the Alaska side logistics. He connected Zimov with the Stevens Village Bison Farm near Delta Junction.
As a favor, it was like, oh, you know, Nikita, let me, I'll just call some people in Alaska and see if I can find out if anyone has any bison for sale.
Called the farm out there and knew right away that we could probably help.
Ben Stevens with Tanana Chiefs Conference says he feels good about tribally raised bison going to Pleistocene Park.
Because it's restoring an animal to the wild.
The bison are quarantined in Delta Junction in preparation for travel to Siberia, but Zimov has yet to set a departure date.
I think our time from early June, the latest.
Zimov says he's working to secure an air carrier to fly the bison to Siberia and raising money online to cover the remaining half of the $200,000 project cost. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
That is all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we are online at alaskapublic.org. Like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman, Rasha McChesney, and Jeremy Shea in Juneau, Teresa Kotsarillis in Bethel, Casey Grove in Anchorage, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Izzy Ross in Dillingham. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight, from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. The Alaska Native Village Corporation Association's 10th Annual Conference and Board Meeting is May 10th and 11th in Anchorage at the Egan Center. Learn about new developments and opportunities from Alaska's business leaders. Network with Alaska Native Corporation executives and hear from the nation's top figures in Native contracting and small business. Agenda and registration at anvca.biz. This message sponsored by the Alaska Native Village Corporation Association. Never miss another episode of your favorite PBS primetime programs thanks to Afternoon Tea on Alaska Public Media TV. Every weekday, you can catch up on the drama of Masterpiece. Be amazed by our universe with Nature and Nova. Search for garage treasures on Antiques Roadshow and solve mysteries alongside our favorite detectives. Watch Afternoon Tea weekdays from 3 to 5 p.m. only on Alaska Public Media TV. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.